All right, we're recording. So we got John Lawson on Smart Brand Marketing. Let's get back into it because we were talking about some good stuff.
Get in, man.
Get in. Yeah, man, but it seems like I bring you back quite a bit, man. You were on the 100th episode. You were on an episode before that. I got you back on now. It's like a recurring thing now.
Man, I am so honored because you speak to such amazing people, and to be able to do that just because I know you. If I didn't know you, you'd be like, who is this guy?
Yeah, it'd be a one-off thing at the most.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's That's crazy, good. Man. Like, the listenership has been growing a lot since I focused in more on just the courses and things like that. You know, it's weird. You know, I've been doing a lot of interviews myself on other shows, but I'm not putting any extra effort into it. You know, just still bringing a good conversation, good guests. And it's going up by like 10-15% per month, which, you know, I think it would be even better if I was doing a weekly show. You know, right now, like 2-3 episodes come out in a month, but no one knows when. So I think that's kind of killing some of the traction. But yeah.
Well, I mean, you could do that. You could change that. So get in. But I mean, you know, what's happening, I think, is just, you know, self-learning is just raising the bar for everyone. And I just see it a lot of places. And when you have good quality content like yours, you know, the word of mouth starts spreading and people start getting engaged.
Yeah, that's what I've seen too. You know what the number one question I'm getting now is from listeners and from clients? There's so much noise. Who should I listen to? It's like a recent thing within the last few months. I've been getting this question over and over. It's like, Tom, who do I listen to? Who do I look for advice online? I'm like, I don't know. That's a very good question. I don't know.
You tell them who you listen to.
Well, I do. I'll send my list. But overall, it's just like, you know, when they say that, I'm like, other than the few people I know, I have no idea. I don't really
see. I mean, you know, where can you go wrong by telling people what you think is the best? I think this is an opportunity for somebody out there, you know, to make lists. That's what people want. People want a list. Here's the top 10 people to listen to about this topic. Top 10 people to listen to about that topic. Top show, top blog, blah, 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 blah. You know, people want these lists because everybody, people are sheeple. I'm just going to tell you. Yeah. They want somebody to follow. They do. They always do. If you walk into a restaurant and it doesn't have the order here sign and the pickup here sign, there'd be absolutely hundreds of people standing around not knowing what to do. People will not take action without somebody to lead them. It's in a crazy. People will disagree with me. They will act like they're totally independent thinkers. But we are not.
Here's a funny thing. When you mentioned this, I went to a conference, right? And around lunch, we had a buffet table, right? There was a buffet thing, you know, and everyone's lined up. There's a line out the door to the buffet, right? Everyone's walking on the right side of the buffet. And I came in. I was like, oh, let me see what's in there. And I'm okay. And I just picked up my plate and went on the left side of the table, which was empty, and just walked through. And it was in the confusion in people's eyes, and then they just started following me. I'm like, dude, this is empty. This whole side is empty.
Well, our buddy Peter Shankman talks about that story where he got off the plane, and he was like in the first seat, and he got off the plane, first one off, and he goes to the left where baggage claim is to the right, and then he realized he was going the wrong way, turns around, and sees half the plane is behind, following him. Man.
It is true, but you're right. I actually would probably do better if I created these lists on my site, because people constantly ask me, and I'm just like, I send them just a few. You know, like you asked me for books before, and I was like, okay, let me write out like the 6 books which I think and why. But yeah, none of this is posted online, which
You know what? You and me both. I'm getting ready to do the same darn thing that we're talking about.
That's hilarious.
Start writing lists. But I've always noticed lists always work on blog posts. I mean, when we do actually throw some lists out there, they always get good interaction, great shares, comments, all that kind of stuff. Because somebody's like, oh, you missed so-and-so and such. That becomes part of the comments, you know? It's always a very good interactive piece of content, whether that's on your blog, you could do it on a live session, you could do it as an episode.
Yeah, that's true. These top 10 lists. I actually stayed away from them, but now when people keep asking me, I'm like, you know, there's something to that. Maybe I should put it in. You know, what I feel, I don't know about you, but what I feel is if you listen to enough advice online, it all cancels itself out, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So this is where I have problems, even myself sometimes, giving advice. I'm like, well, if you listen to me and listen to just the next guy next door, it'll probably cancel itself out. So I'm you know, I don't
know. Hey, you figure if a robot can make recommendations, you and I can.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right. People who listen to this also listen to. I can do that too.
You know, like the more experience I have, the less advice I want to give, because it always comes down to it depends.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
You know,
yeah.
Like, I mean, that's just my thing. When I was first starting out, I was all like, I got this, you know, read these books, read that. Like now there's a few things like with copywriting, you know, I'll tell people to read one book because I just know from experience that almost everyone who is successful just read that book and it's their favorite book too. And most of the other books are just copies of it. So in few things, like I'll give just one recommendation, but in a lot of other stuff, it's like, should I go after this niche or that? I'm like, I don't know. It depends. Mm. You know, like I have a call, which I'm actually going to cancel later today from a possible client. And I looked a little deeper and, you know, she's in this like yoga, transformation, spirituality niche. And, you know, she's asking me about why she has to chase people down for money and things. And I was like, you know, in my personal belief is that I cannot work with that niche, you know, just for a lot of different reasons. And I'm like, yeah, I gotta cancel this. I can't help this lady out because I feel weird about it. You know, it's like if someone feels weird about sales, you're gonna have a problem selling. You know, I get this with clients a lot too. It's like, oh, I hate selling. Well, what's your biggest problem? Not enough sales. Go, okay, there you go. You know, so so with this, with the meditation stuff, I'm like, look, I get that, but when you're promising people you're gonna, you know, like cleanse their chakras and stuff, I'm like, I can't help you market this. I can't do it.
Come on, man. Chakra cleansing.
I can't do it, man.
That's because you need your chakras cleared.
I think so. You know, but it'll be the same problem, John. You're gonna have to chase me down for that payment because once my chakras are clear,
you're out of here. You know, that's very funny. And I think I was talking to a client yesterday, and I was telling her that the problem she was having is she was trying to say, oh, yeah, we were talking about MLMs, multi-level marketing. Wow. And she was doing a new multi-level marketing thing, right? And she wasn't a client, now that I think about it, because she goes through these MLMs all the time, right? And she's like, well, how can I do this better? I'm like, the problem is you're trying to sell something you've never used. You've never used this product, and you don't believe in it. You have no belief. You have no basis for what you're saying. You're trying to read their sales documents and then regurgitate that shit. And it doesn't resonate with the people, you know, because we have a bullshit filter. We really do, right? Everybody kind of has this bullshit filter. However, if we like somebody, it will get us over the bullshit filter.
That's true. Yeah.
Right? If you like somebody enough, or you want to be like that somebody, if they show you enough cars and mansions, then you all of a sudden remove the bullshit. It overrides the bullshit, and your desire to be like that individual will make you give up the money. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, but with MLMs, man, you're selling the system. You're not selling the product. That's the thing. When people drag me to a couple of those meetings, and I give it to them. They put on a show. They put on a show, man. I think it was Market America. I don't know if that's the right one. It was a long time ago. But they put on a show, man. Like, I was watching this. It was like a concert, you know, with people screaming how much they make. And, you know, if they could have, they would have drove a Lambo outside onto the stage. But it was, you know, and it was funny, too, because they brought the products out at one point. but he didn't say anything about the products other than we have products. Other than we have products, you know. And I'm looking at them, it looks like a bunch of like different colored water in plastic bottles, right, with different labels on it. I'm like, what is that garbage? I'm asking the guy who brought me. He's like, don't worry about that. Look at the producers. And I'm like, what? I'm like, dude, what is wrong?
Oh, my God. I went to one that was about an instant coffee, and it was hot. I mean, everybody was doing this instant coffee. I go to the thing, and I drink the coffee. And I'm like, this tastes like shit. Why are people drinking this? They were buying up like left and right. I don't know if it still exists, but at one point it was a hot commodity to sell on MLM, and it tasted horrible. Horrible. It was the worst thing I ever tasted.
Yeah, it's not about the product, man.
It's not about the product. It's all about the hype.
Yeah, so with these people, I always like, well, you do understand you're selling the system, right? And if we really sit down and go over the system, you will either walk out or you're just hopeless. You know, but that's really it. Like, I had a lady, she was trying to sell this electricity stuff before at some festival. And I don't know, I was a little drunk and bored, and I just felt like I'm going to discuss this with her. And, you know, she's telling me about this huge opportunity. I was like, okay, look, because I had that SEO company running back then. And, you know, I was like, look, my lowest client is $379 per month, right? That's how much I charge them. Mm-hmm. And it's recurring, right? So I make one sale, it's recurring. They usually stay around for 2 or 3 years. So I added that up, put it on a piece of paper. I'm like, okay, let's look at your opportunity. How do I get to that? Because this is one sale, you know? I just made one sale, and it's bringing me this much. And, dude, like, she couldn't pull it out. I would probably have to sell half the planet, like, from the way she was explaining it. You know, I'm like, look. She's like, yeah, but if you get this one, it's $20, and then you get 2%, yes. And then you get 1%, then you get 5%, and then 0.5, and then if they get 3, I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Look, in my business, I sell one product. You're talking about me selling 30 people, then me supervising and managing and training them so they can sell more, and we still didn't get to the $379.
Wow.
You know, when I put it that way, she was about to cry. She was like, well, I was like, look.
Yeah, do the math.
Do your thing. I was like, do your thing. Good luck. Electricity, yeah. And I'm out.
Yeah, do the math. Anyway. Yeah, okay, I don't know how we got on MLMs, but I'm not a fan. And you're not either.
I'm not a
fan.
We
went back and forth on it.
Yeah, it's one of those things, man, where, like, I couldn't believe how bullshitty it is, but I had this kid, which I remember, we used to hang out at the dog park in Brooklyn, because he had a dog, I had a dog, for friends on Facebook, and after 6 years, the guy kind of like reaches out to me, he's like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, what? You know, how are things? I'm like, they're fine. And, you know, he keeps doing this. I'm like, okay, what do you want?
Because, you know, yeah, you know, it's coming.
Yeah, it's too much. He's like, you know, I got this opportunity. I was like, is it an MLM? He's like, no, it's not, but it was an MLM.
Of course it is. They started with, I've got this opportunity.
I was like, dude, stop. I have enough opportunities which I say no to already, and they're much better than yours.
That's hilarious. It's horrible.
It is, man. How is your online course doing? I know you've launched that.
The which one?
The boot camp.
The boot camp on speaking?
Yeah.
Speakers boot camp. Hey, it's not called Speaker's Bootcamp, but it actually went really well.
Okay.
I did it all the way through one time, and then you know how I get. Like, oh, okay, I need to package this back up and do it again. So give me a couple of weeks.
It's on the back burner again.
Yes, but it really did very well. And now, like you said, I got people asking me about it. So I think it's really time to relaunch that, package it up, and make it happen. But we'll see.
But just for the listeners, because we do speak about online courses a lot.
Yeah, cool.
How did you get the traffic and get the traction and just make the initial sale before we move on to a different topic?
All right, so the first thing I did is I asked my audience. Now, of course, I've got a pretty, you know, good-sized audience of people to poll. So, I mean, like, literally on my Facebook page every day, I ask a question, right? And so when I want something for real, and I mean, it's just a random question, you know, what TV show do you like? You know, who's your favorite, you know, what's your favorite soda or something stupid, right? But then every once in a while, I'll drop in and ask a real question that I really want to poll people. So I ask people, what is it that you want to know about getting paid to speak? And I got responses back. And from those responses, I put together a good ad based on their need. Okay?
Yeah.
And so once I did that ad to a landing page, I got people to sign up. So I got people to sign up, and at the end of the landing page, I told them to go join a group. This is a group launch. All right. And I don't know if there's an actual title for it, but what you do is you get people to go join this group. It's a free group. And the reason why you get them to join the group is because, you know, they don't have to give you a email address or anything like that. It's just like, okay, we're getting ready to launch. Go join this group. Once they join the group, now I have, you know, one-to-one conversation with them. And literally, I just get them all nice and wet for a launch. And I tell them, hey, we're going to do it tonight, such and such o'clock, and be on there. They're on there for the training, and we sell the course at the end. Stupid simple.
Yeah, basically a webinar sale, except you figured out a better way to get that initial contact going. You know, instead of trying to get their emails with a lead magnet, just ask a question, join a group. So not only did they not have to give up the email, they feel like they're at part of something now. You know,
they feel like they're part, right. And I'm about to say, it's not like you're going to necessarily, you know, get more people. You might get a bigger list doing, you know, blank ads to a squeeze page. But when it comes to how many people sign up, the number of show-ups are way greater in the group model than they are on a email list sign up page on a squeeze page. So, I mean, basically, for every 100 people that will sign up for your squeeze page, about 30% will show up. When you do it this way, about 70% will show up.
Yeah,
so,
that's a huge difference. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's always about showing up. You're going to sell to the people the best that actually watch you live. The replay will get you maybe a few 10% sign up, maybe. Nah, not even 10%. I'm saying 10% of what normally would sign up. All right, that's what I mean. But they won't. The number of people that listen to you live are the best audience that you're going to sell to. So I really go for getting people to attend versus just having a long list of people that I have to nurture for the next 7 days to hopefully maybe make a purchase or even just watch the damn video all the way through.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've seen with some of my clients that between the live and the replay, well, not even the replay, just like the evergreen webinar, right? So we're just playing that one. It was only like 1.5% difference in conversions for a lot of them. It was very small. So that means that the live one must have just not been as good. They're not presenting as well. I don't know. I don't know what the difference would be then, because the live and the evergreen didn't do that much difference. I was like, dude, just do an evergreen. Like, there's no point being live for just a 1%, 1.5% increase.
Well, so that's the difference, though. I mean, an evergreen is appearing as if it's live, yeah?
Yeah. So, yes and no, right? So, the way we do it is we'll have two times, right? We'll have like, okay, join us on Thursday at 7 p.m. or watch it in 15 minutes. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? I think the people thinking that, oh, the one on Thursday is going to be live. And it feels live. It definitely feels live, you know?
Right. So do those have differences or no?
A bit. But the average, well, yeah, I guess they do a bit. So the one on Thursday converts about the same as the live, and the one is like 3% less. That's why the average is between those. Yeah, I would think so. A few percent definitely off.
Interesting.
I think the number of dropouts increases on replay.
On replay, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you just expect that.
Yeah, so we have a sequence for the dropouts, right? You know.
Right.
Well, we have sequences for everyone, the people who dropped out, who missed, if they dropped out before seeing the call to action, there's a different one. And if they dropped out after you know, they heard the call to action. Like, so there's different segments, but I think the emails, yeah, they definitely bring back some of that. So we have a good email sequence. I think that's what saves it. If we did not, I think it would be about the same as you said, about maybe even 20-30% difference. It's the emails, like just getting people like, look, this must have happened, that must have happened. And we have like very personable ones, like what went wrong? What did I do wrong? Did you get busy? You know, was it too expensive? Like we have these different questions which we hit them with, and you know, depending on what they do.
A follow up.
Yeah, and the follow up, like very personable, not like, oh, I see you missed a webinar. It's just like, look, man, like things happen. You know, like it's a very personable thing, and most of them will actually start responding. And this only makes sense for the more expensive products. You know, if you were selling like a $97 or $147 product, answering these questions wouldn't make much sense. You're just like, at least for me, you know, like $400 or $500, then yeah, like, you know, I'll send an email back to get $500. Why not?
Have you found a like sweet spot for pricing? I know you've actually told me these numbers before. What are the numbers? Here I'm interviewing you, but what are the levels that pricing plays into the game?
So remember, I told you around $150. You're at that spot when you leave the Walmart shoppers and you start getting into the mid to elite shoppers. Right. So there's a difference in positioning then, right? Like these guys want 30-40 hours of content and they'll never take it. That's the below 150 crowd. They just want, you know, everything, include toilet paper, they'll take it. The one above, they don't mind getting those bonuses, but what they want to see is a shortcut, right? So above $150 or $200, so like you kind of have to see in your market, but 150 is like a average. For those guys, it's like, yeah, okay, I'm getting all these bonuses, it's fine, checklist, but how quickly can I go through this course and how valuable is it? Because they start counting their hours, right? So if a course takes like 3-4 hours, they're going to add that up to the value, to the actual price of the course, usually in their heads. So like if a course is $500 or let's say 300 and someone's hour is worth 100, they'll be like, okay, that's 4 hours, $400 plus the course, which is 300, $700 is going to cost me for that. What is the value of the course? Oh, okay, it's $5,000. That's worth it. If they think the value is 1,000 and they got to spend 700, often they will skip up, right? So the value of the transformation needs to be at least 3-4 times bigger than the price of the course, the hours taken, and then it's an easier sale, right? And this is why with that spiritual lady, she's like, I want to sell this for $450 or $500, you know, and I know just from speaking enough to these people, like, well, what's the transformation? Well, their kanzas will be, chakras will be cleansed. Well, what is the actual value of that? You know, and what it comes down to, it's usually people in a bad position in their life who are looking for help. They have no money, you know, so obviously they won't be able to pay. And if they really want it, they'll sign up and then you got to chase them for payments. It's just a normal thing, right? You're not selling really to Walmart shoppers, but you're just selling to people in a bad spot. You know, it's a very hard sale. And I just don't believe in the value itself. Because it's hard to justify. How much is that? You know, cleansing my chakras, how valuable that is. So, you know, if you know who you're selling to, and with her we would, and the next question then is, you know, if we can't really pinpoint what the value is of the transformation, it's hard to get the price down, right? Because then, like, we can deduct, right? Let's say you think your transformation is worth $5,000. All right, so let's divide that by 4. And now we have around $1,000. Right, so how many hours does it take? If you're smart, you give them a shortcut, 1 hour, that's a $900 course. It's easy, right? So $900 course, 1 hour of their time, let's say $100, 1,000 times 4, transformation, that everything makes sense, easy sale. You know, because people will be like, yeah, hell yeah, I'll do that. 1 hour, I can get up to 4K. Right, so it's just that way we've been kind of thinking about it more. Because people like formulas, right? It's really hard, like with advertising, you know, that book, Scientific Advertising, the rules. Well, if you look through the history, you know, the guy built the agency on those rules, and then the next agencies were built avoiding those rules, you know, but often you need some kind of rules to start with so you can start breaking them. And that's why I've kind of come up with these type of rules. And yeah, of course there's going to be exceptions. Someone's going to say like, well, I sold this thing for 4,000, and you know, I'm like, yeah, look, it happens, It does. But it's good to have, you know, a guideline for what mostly works, and then you can play around with that.
Yeah, that's good. Very good. I like that. I like rules.
Yeah.
And I like shortcuts.
Yeah.
I like rules and shortcuts and all that.
And the thing with selling at webinars, you know, usually when you have a regular price, which would be, let's say, $700-$800 for a course, at the webinar, you know, your special offer should be about 60-70% of that. So, you know, you take that down a bit, and then you got to give the payment option, which is always a little more expensive, right? So, so you'll have something like, you know, this course is regularly $800, but on this webinar, you're going to only pay $400-something or only $99 a month for six months, which is less than a Starbucks coffee a day. So you still want to make that same sales speech as you would do with a regular sales job. You know, like they always break it down and then break it down by day. When you're doing payment plans, you actually want to say, like, you know, per day. Like, it's less than this per day, less than $3-something dollars per day, you know. Or you just always want the one-time payment, so, you know, you'll kind of make that a little cheaper and offer a bonus with that, too. Like, this lady I know, what she does is, like, if you pay that, you will get a cup with your name on it and the course's name, whatever. You know, she'll give something like that. It's a physical bonus, yeah, because she wants that money now.
Yeah, you want them to take action now.
Yeah. But it's, you know, but that's the thing I found with payment plans, you want to do the daily, right? So they're still paying per month, but what you're positioning it as, like, it's less than a coffee a day or something like that.
Right.
And people are, you know, because if they're going to do payment plans, there's a reason for that. So you just want to go as low as possible in their minds, right? So even though it's going to be more expensive long term, it's going to be $600 because it's like $99 per month for 6 months. Yeah, but in their head, it's like less than a coffee a day. So you're getting in that weird crowd, right, that likes to put stuff on credit.
You know, a weird crowd.
Well, yeah, because you know,
they're not weird.
They often overpay. They often overpay
but
a
I
lot.
Get it.
They don't calculate.
But they don't get it that they're paying more.
Yeah, so to me, it's a weird crowd. Like, I always calculate. You know, like if someone's selling me a car,
right,
and they'll be like, the car is $15,000. Okay. And I've had this happen to me before. And the guy's like, oh, you know, I'll give you this awesome deal. The first year is 0%, then this and that. I'm like, okay, look.
Yeah.
Here's the $15,000. Let's get the warranty, which is zero deductible, and go away.
And right. Pay over months and end up paying $24,000 for the same car you could have got for $15,000.
Yeah, but they hated that because one, they didn't get that extra cash from the bank or merchant on the financial, you know, transaction. Two,
right.
I used to work at a warranty direct company, and they told me never sell zero deductible. That's the worst deal for the warranty direct. So I always say, I want the 0%. And they do everything to talk me out of it. I'm like, no, look, this is what I want. I'm paying everything up front, and I want that warranty, zero deductible. And make it happen. And they're pissed. They just, you know, dude, it's so funny how badly they want to sell you a financial system when it's like, dude, no, it's the dumbest thing ever. I can pay it up front. Like, you got the wrong guy. You got the wrong guy. Yeah.
Most people rent their lifestyles instead of owning their life.
Yeah, and that's usually like the way I see you always brand your stuff, right? Like you have that way, like, you know, even when you did that laptop lifestyle, you kind of had this type of phrase, right? Like that some people do this, but this is the way I do it, and I love that.
Yeah.
You know, like you give like a hook, but then you smack them with the reality very quickly.
That's because that's the only place I live, dude.
Yeah, but it's, I you know, I
it
like
is.
That because you don't stay in that, like, look, you know, 4-hour work week and quietly, like, you know, after I sold the company for $20 million, it's like, look, come on my boat, and then you smack the shit out of them and be like, now get to work.
Right.
Right, which is, I think, much better, you know, because you hook them. I think the problem you have with hooking people that way is just getting all the crappy customers out the way. You know, because a lot more will come. That's like, yeah, I want this. I want to be on the boat. I want to have a lifestyle with a laptop. I got a laptop. Where are you going, John?
Yeah.
You know, and then you're just like, whoa. Hold on there, professor.
I need more than just the laptop, bro. I need more just than that. But, yeah, you got to have I think just in general, you have to have a realistic viewpoint of success, or you will get knocked off of your peer pretty quickly, and you'll feel like defeated, man.
Well, Yeah, so, you know, I've thought about this a lot, too, lately, you know, and I used to be very proud of the fact that I was, like, a hustling guy and a serial entrepreneur, and I don't anymore at all. You know, now, when I look on LinkedIn, because we've done some LinkedIn marketing, and I don't know, just hit me when I was looking at it, and I see all these people being serial entrepreneurs, that just, I'm like, look, there's a 5% chance that this guy's really good at making exits, and there's a 95% chance he's just really crappy at building a good business. That's why he switches over and over and over.
Over and over, yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was cool at the beginning, but then everybody started getting into it, and everybody's just not skilled at it. That's all.
Well, you know, what happens, too, is it depends on the people around you, but my friends, a lot of them had 8-digit exits. You know, and just, you know, make a lot of money. And it just made me think, like, look, you know, not really going all in on something, like, I can't make that happen, you know. And then some
of them. Because you're half in and half out.
That's it, man, like running too many companies. And some of them made it pretty quick, but it was still going all in one niche at least. You know what I mean?
Well, and now it goes all the way back to what you started saying at the beginning, is that your podcast is growing 15% month over month now that you've gone all in on courses.
Yeah, pretty much. And I think if I went all in on the schedule too, it would grow even quicker. And I'm thinking of how to make that system work, because it's all about systems, right?
Yeah.
And the thing
was... Well, the welfare system, you can always bring one out on the 1st and the 15th.
The welfare system, I love that.
And we only do it on the 1st and the 15th. But whatever it is, whatever schedule you put it on, people will show up for your time.
Dude, I love this. Dude, the welfare system. And when we have a good month, you'll get a dividend.
Oh. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man, I haven't even thought about that. I was like, yeah, I should do it every 2 weeks. But if I tell people we're doing a welfare system.
All right, 10%. 10%.
They'll be like, yeah, that's Tom.
Oh, my God. That is too hilarious. But, yeah, do it, man. Definitely, you know, get into some sort of calendar where you are coming on at the same time every month, and people will show up. People used to always ask me, how many times a week do I need to do blog posts? Mm. You know, they'll ask you stuff like that. And I'm like, well, when do you want to do the blog post? I can do one every Monday. I'm like, fantastic, do one every Monday. So now your blog posts show up 4 times a month, only on Mondays at noon. Literally, if you do that, not only will the crowd get used to when you post, but also the algorithm will get used to when you post, and it will be able to boost your awareness based on that time frame. So we would find that happens all the time. Once you put it on something that's repeatable, even the algorithm will get into the game and show your post or your podcast more right around the time when you're going to launch.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's just creating that system, right, so that you don't miss anything. And I found that some of the best podcasts, and I know some of these hosts, they all tell me the same thing. That's that consistency, right? And with me, okay, I'm consistent. I'm putting out episodes, but people don't know when, right? So that is a problem. When I think of it, you know, if someone said like, the Game of Thrones is coming out, and it's going to come out anytime between December 1st and 50.
Exactly.
You know, people are like, what? When do I watch it?
Yeah, Game of Thrones, once a week.
Yeah.
You knew it was coming, and you'd be sitting there in front of the television waiting for it every week.
I actually wasn't, but Billions I was.
Did you watch the show? I did the last season and a half about.
Yeah?
Yeah. Or no, last 2 seasons, because the last season was broken up into 2 parts. But yeah, I did watch the end.
But did you ever start watching Billions?
Never started watching Billions.
No? Okay.
I you know what? I will. I cut cable, man. I stopped cable, so maybe I'll go out and look for it now.
Yeah, it was just like the only show I still kept on watching. It was Billions. Yeah, I mean, it's just, It had something. It was almost like The Wire. It just hooked me in. I couldn't stop watching.
It couldn't stop, yeah. Right? Yeah, I'll check it out. I mean, I really didn't totally get into. I thought the epicness of it was pretty awesome for Game of Thrones. I thought the, you know, directing and all that, but it's just not my kind of thing. I'm not into dragons and
yeah.
I just, because it was something my spouse loves and I would watch it with him, and but I'm not necessarily all into that stuff.
Yeah,
I'd rather be into Billions.
See, that's the thing, right? Like, I got Game of Thrones, but I'm like, look, tits and dragons, great. But I want to get back to what I know. And, you know, back when I was younger, you know, The Wire was, like, very close because it's, like, you know, in the streets. And now Billions, it's like, okay, it's in the money industry, like, you know, making.
Right.
So it's, like, I like to kind of watch stuff where I can kind of, you know, see myself, like, anchored somewhere around there. You know, like, okay, I can see myself in that world. When I look at Game of Thrones, I'm like, which one am I?
Yeah, I don't know.
I just, like, when I think of my daily life, like, where do I fit in this show?
I'm the dragon.
Yeah, I'm the
dragon.
I'm
burning
right?
shit up. I am the dragon. Breathing fire.
But you know, you mentioned, like, the way you hook people in, and I've ran into this with one client, right? And all he does is get problem clients and refunds based on the way he drags people in, right? Because it's kind of like, yeah. How do you deal with that? How do you deal with these problematic clients? Because you do more mainstream stuff than me, so I don't have this this problem as much.
Well, I mean, I don't take anything personally.
Yeah.
That's A. But I don't really have even though I have the mainstream client, I don't have those issues that I see other people have. I don't have a whole lot of, you know, people wanting refunds or whatever. I think one of the things you have to be is very transparent with the outcome. That you got to really set their expectations properly. And if their expectations are in line with what your delivery is, you won't have that issue. Right? So, give me an example of maybe where you have people just refunding. What, like, why? What's their why?
Yeah, so with this guy, he's selling an opportunity which seems a bit scammy. But it's not. It's not. It's the way he positioned it. It's for coders. It's an opportunity for coders to find bugs in Facebook and Google and stuff like that and make money, which they do.
Right.
But it looks almost like a make money online niche. It looks like it. It feels like it, you know? But it's an actual thing, right? It's like, well, Facebook will pay you out, you know, if you find this thing. And he basically, all he does is just show the systems and the ways of finding these bugs.
Right, but why do people want a refund?
So this is funny, right? He is a hacker working with the hacker crowd, and the hacker crowd tries to hack his stuff all the time.
Oh, they're hacking. Well, there you go.
Yeah, and take his stuff, and then they'll watch it and be like, okay. Like, so he says,
they want money back.
Yeah, so he has a 30-day, like, refund guarantee, and they'll watch for 29 days, and that's kind of last day.
Well, like, you need. Okay, make it 14. See if that changes.
Yeah, so I've told him some things that, like, Steam does, right? Because I just thought about that model. You know, people playing games, and some will obviously want to try to play the whole game before it's done. Because I was looking at their model with the refunds. And what they do is they give you, I think it's like 14 days and or 20% of the game played, right? So with him,
okay. Yeah, that's good.
So with him, I was like, look, why don't you just pull the same model? Because these guys obviously dealt with a similar crowd. And be like, look, if someone watched no more than 20% of your course and it hasn't been 14 days, refund. Otherwise,
go away.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Because we can definitely keep track on what modules they've opened. And it's like, yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah.
Or how long they've stayed in different courses. So you could definitely do that.
Yeah, so for him, I just said, look, I don't know, but I'll look at the industries which I know dealt with this problem. And I looked at Steam because I was like, that's going to be the first place where people want to game the system. It's gamers. The only thing they want to do is game the system.
They're gamers.
Yeah, and I looked at the refund policy, and I was like, look, that makes sense.
So, I mean, one of the things, like, just for your audience, just in general, if they are having this issue, one of the things you really want is you want to ask why, at the end. So part of your offboarding, make that a question when they're asking for the refund. Why do you want the refund? You'll be a surprise what people will say. You'll be very surprised. Mm-hmm. And then you'll find a theme. And usually, like you're saying, this guy's working with hackers, so they're hacking a system. So that is a very possible reason. Sometimes the messaging in the sales copy, which would be the long form, you know, webinar, or if it's just a letter, whatever, usually there is a disconnect between their expectation and what you told them they were going to get. And then you want to tease that out, find it, and make sure you clarify it in your pitch.
Yeah, yeah, that's a different scenario.
That's a
but
different thing.
But it's
yeah.
definitely
but
a problem.
But that's usually
too.
What's happening.
Yeah, that's definitely a problem. With his, it's just an audience, right? He's attracting.
Yeah.
Like yeah, they try to hack his Skype, everything. Like he's.
Wow.
Yeah, he's always like worried. He's like, Tom, like, oh, everything he does, he's like, man, I gotta watch it because they'll try to hack it.
Wow.
But it's the
that's
audience.
Crazy.
It's the audience.
It's just the nature of the people.
Yeah, so I told him, like, it's a very unique spot. Like, you're teaching something that makes sense and it's valuable, but your audience is one of those.
Okay. That's crazy, though.
Tell me about the Bali trip, you know, because for people...
The Bali trip!
Listening,
dude, we're going to Bali. You coming? Yeah, you're coming over. November.
what
November
is it?
3rd, huh?
November
3rd through the 9th.
Oh, man. I have...
Nothing.
That's conference season. That's conference season in Thailand, too. I don't know, man.
Is
like,
it? Yeah. I hear you. Well, anyway, we'll tell you about that anyway. Yeah. So I'm doing a mastermind in Bali, 3 through 9. You can go to BaliWithJohn.com. And, you know, I'm just going to open up the entire... It's not just a mastermind, it's also a retreat. I mean, so you come in with the issues and you go out with the solutions based on where it is that you are and what you need. But also at the same time, it will allow many of us to kind of just not vent. I wouldn't call it venting. I would call it like opening up, because, you know, a lot of us, we sit in isolation. Simply at our desk, like you said, living the laptop life, but people around us really don't understand what it's like to have the pressure of being a solopreneur or being the CEO of a company. There is unique situations that only other people that are in that situation can really empathize with, understand, and make good suggestions about where to go and how to get out. So that's the other part of it. And that's really my whole reason for doing it, is to really help those kind of business leaders. Because I get, like you say, you know, when you're coaching with people, a lot of times when I'm coaching with people, their issue is not necessarily just the business. It's the pressure of being the head honcho and having all things depend on them and their decisions. And it ends up sometimes having effects on their personal life. So it's really weird to me what people will tell me. You know, you go in, you say, we're going to do some business counseling or consulting, and we or business consulting, and I end up really doing a lot of personal counseling first.
Yeah, I found that before, too, when I did coaching. It was always the personal stuff which was coming
out.
Yeah. It's hard, man. It's definitely hard.
And you have to trust. You know, people do that with me because they trust. They know that, you know, what you tell me, if somebody finds out about what you tell me, that means you told them. I didn't tell them. You know, so they have that, and I want to create that same environment in Bali. So we're keeping it small. And it's only, you know, 10 people I'm taking with me. It's going to be like epic trip of a lifetime kind of thing, of course, because you're in Bali. And we're going to do that part too. But also, you know, we're going to get into the mastermind very seriously and help you fix whatever it is you need.
Interesting. Why did you choose Bali over Thailand?
Well, you know what? Here's what happened. We had a conflict. I had a friend of mine that was doing one the exact same week in Bali. I mean, in Thailand.
Oh.
And so the week was good for me. So I was like, you know, I'm going to move it over to Bali. That's A. And then B, the location we got in Bali was so epic for, like, you know, half the price of Thailand.
Oh, okay. And, yeah, yeah.
So that was another thing, too.
All right.
But we're coming to Thailand at some point.
Because I'm thinking about it, but I just, I think I have a conference all week at the end of October. Then someone else just messaged me if I want to hang out with him and a group on some island for a couple days after that. Then this thing with you, then there's another SEO conference in Chiang Mai, I think, right
that's
after yours.
Girl.
You know, that's a month. Like, I'm done after 5 days of conferencing. I'm done. Like, I just don't want to see people anymore. Just go away. I'm good.
Sounds like you got a whole month worth coming up.
Yeah, I don't know if I can do a whole month. I don't think I would be very pleasant by the time I start venting at yours.
Yeah, right? Exactly. You'll get to mine and just have an attitude. Everybody be like, what's up with the Tom guy?
Well, you said I can vent.
You can, bro. You know, you can. And then you have to listen. That's another thing, too. You know,
yeah, I
make people listen in my mastermind. You can't talk for X amount of time.
I actually don't like talking that much. But if someone says vent, it's just going to be very short and very blunt. That's pretty much
it. You know what? Now I remember. Yeah, you're right. Everybody's going to just sit there with their head in their hands. And it's like, wow.
Well, but it's done. It was quick. Man. It was quick. It was only a few minutes. Yeah.
Oh, my God. So, yes, that's what's coming up in the Bali thing.
I mean, I like the idea, and I think what I've seen before from my friends doing this, it usually becomes a recurring thing, right? So it becomes bigger, it becomes just more, I don't know, it's like people grow kind of roots, right, in one of these things. It's like the conference becomes like a family type of slash event. You know, and people start coming back and following it. So I've seen this happen quite a few times. One of the ones that people have been trying to make me go to is Baby Bathwater. Dumbest name ever. I hear it's an epic
event.
Yeah.
They go to an island this last time, right?
It's actually happening a couple times a year now. But it's like a family, you know, and these people will keep going. And everyone that comes back is like, oh, it blew my mind. And I've been a part of a conference like that. It's called the Dynamite Circle. And we've done a lot of stuff in Berlin and Bangkok. And now they do small ones in other cities, Austin and Germany. And so there's like different places. And it's like a family. It's funny. Like sometimes we would get to a city because we moved around a lot more. Well, I did than now. And it was like, okay, I got to Berlin. Where's my DCers at? And next thing you know, I have a group, and it's like a family that I've never spoken to. It was the weirdest thing. But that's what happens with these events a lot of the time.
That's because you're there and you're sharing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? There, you're sharing people. You start trusting people. You find your crew. It's like, oh, my God, these people understand me.
Yeah. Ah.
You know, and you can't wait till the following year. And it's just it's that I need that for me, and a lot of people need that. If you haven't done something like that, guys, you got to get in with your tribe.
Yeah, I think building a tribe while working on the laptop, like you said, on your own, dealing with these problems by yourself, it changes everything.
And especially if you have a tribe that follows you. That amplifies the need for you to have a tribe that you can get in. Because all of a sudden, when your tribe is following you, you're giving, 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 giving. And it's hard to get anything back from your own tribe other than the satisfaction of seeing them doing the work, you know. But a lot of times you're just, you are so isolated, even though you've got all of these followers. That's the way I feel. And so that's kind of why I'm doing this.
Cool, man. I'm loving it. Where can people find you?
JohnLawson.com.
That's it.
Very simple. Yep.
That's it.
JohnLawson.com. The Bali thing is Bali with John. And we'll have the speaking thing coming up soon. So I'll let you know on that so you can let the guys know how to get paid to travel the world.
Selling the dreams again, John. You're selling the dream.
It's the dream, bro. I'm living the dream.
Oh, man. Before you go, let me know if you enjoyed this interview. Leave a review, subscribe, join the Smart Brand Marketing Facebook page, whatever is easiest. Also, if you need my help marketing your online course, or know that your business could use some SEO, come to smartbrandmarketing.com, check out the case studies, and reach out to me. Once again, smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.